people aren't looking for magical answers, and they're not looking for unicorns.
That is a top official of the World Health Organization saying people want the truth. This is Wednesday, September 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, China looks to be strengthening its reign on foreign reporters. Hong Kong's leader backs Beijing on the arrest of some trying to flee her city by boat. Relations between China and India are raw over another skirmish, and you'll hear about a robot that is built to be very slow. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The head of emergencies at the World Health Organization said that governments that provide politically motivated information to their communities about the coronavirus pandemic could face a political backlash, and called for transparency and admission of error when warranted by decision makers. Dr. Michael Ryan, speaking in general terms after being asked about conflicting messages sent by the Brazilian government over the response to COVID-19, suggested people will not be fooled.
Good governments build trust with communities by only providing them with verified, evidence-based information. Because if things go wrong, communities will understand. But if communities perceive that they're getting information that is being politically manipulated or that is being managed in a way that is distorting evidence, then unfortunately that comes back to roost. That comes back at a government politically at a later stage. I think that has been the case around the world and for many different disasters over time.
Ryan said messages about the COVID-19 situation sometimes come with political overtones and alluded to a saying that trust takes years to build but seconds to lose.
Transparency, honesty, admitting error, admitting uncertainty, in fact, highlighting uncertainties and then highlighting where certainties do exist. People can take it. People can absorb that. People are smart and people are realistic. And people aren't looking for magical answers, and they're not looking for unicorns. They understand. We all live in the real world. And in trying to present oversimplified, simplistic solutions for people is not a long-term strategy that wins with populations. So we would call for transparency, consistency, honesty, and admission of uncertainty, admission of error. And I believe that builds trust with communities. And it doesn't matter whether you're a local official, a state official, a national official, or a global official. Those same principles, I think, pertain.
The WHO Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, urged countries to learn from the current pandemic to prepare for the next one. He had this warning.
This will not be the last pandemic. History teaches us that outbreaks and pandemics are a fact of life. But when the next pandemic comes, the world must be ready, more ready than it was this time. In recent years, many countries have made enormous advances in medicine, but too many have neglected their basic public health systems, which are the foundation for responding to infectious disease outbreaks.
Tedros praised Thailand, Mongolia, Senegal, and other countries for their response to the virus. Meanwhile, on Monday, India passed Brazil as the country with the second highest number of confirmed coronavirus cases. The health ministry there reported a record 90,802 new cases Monday, giving India a total of more than 4.2 million since the outbreak began. India also added 1,016 deaths Monday, pushing its overall total to 71,642. The United States leads the world with about 6.3 million confirmed cases and 189,000 deaths. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The U.S. is reportedly considering imposing a ban on some or all products made with cotton from China's Xinjiang region amid reports of forced labor and other human rights violations. The UN says, don't ignore North Korea human rights. Stranded refugees plead with Australia to ease COVID-19 border closures. Pakistan prepares to free female prisoners amid calls for jail reform. Thousands of physician trainees return to work in South Korea after a nearly three-week walkout that has complicated the nation's efforts to contain a new wave of COVID-19. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. Two Australian media outlets have flown their reporters out of China over what they say was a diplomatic standoff, the latest tense episode as relations between Beijing and Australia continue to deteriorate. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Bill Birtles and Michael Smith, China correspondents for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and the newspaper The Australian Financial Review, were forced to shelter in Australia's embassy in Beijing and its consulate in Shanghai. The journalists were told they were persons of interest in an investigation into a Chinese-born Australian news anchor who's been detained in Beijing. Cheng Li, a high-profile business presenter on Chinese state television, was taken last month into custody, where she remains. According to news reports, Birtles and Smith had been banned from leaving China until they answered questions about Cheng's case. Both men were questioned before being allowed to fly home, where they spoke briefly to reporters at Sydney Airport.
It's very disappointing to have to leave under those circumstances, and it's a relief to be back in a country with genuine rule of law, but this was a whirlwind and it's not a particularly good experience.
It's so good to be home, so happy. I can't say any more at the moment, but such a relief to be home, so really happy.
Did you feel threatened at all when you were over there?
A little bit, yes. It was a complicated experience.
In a statement, the Australian Financial Review said the targeting of two journalists was both regrettable and disturbing and is not in the interests of a cooperative relationship between Australia and China. Diplomatic relations have soured in recent times over allegations of cyber espionage by China and its interference in Australian politics. Beijing has rejected the allegations as nothing but lies. Analysts believe that trade is being used to exert pressure on Canberra. Australia has much to lose if relations continue to worsen. China is Australia's biggest trading partner, and its demand for iron ore and coal has underpinned Australia's recent prosperity. The repatriation of the two journalists will add to the mistrust between the countries. Australia's Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, said it was a disappointing series of events. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This comes on the heels of an organization of foreign correspondents saying China is delaying the renewal of press cards for at least five journalists working at four U.S. media outlets. The move is an apparent retribution for Washington's targeting of Chinese reporters working in the United States. Atlanta-based CNN said its China correspondent was among those given a letter authorizing him to continue reporting for the next 2 months instead of the usual one-year press card. The Foreign Correspondents Club of China said the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg have also been targeted but did not name the fourth outlet. China's move comes after the U.S. capped the number of Chinese citizens who could be employed by Chinese media outlets. Happening now in Asia, Walt Disney Company's release of the movie Mulan, which is set in China and meant to appeal to audiences there, has provoked a backlash on social media over its star's support of Hong Kong police and for being partly filmed in the Xinjiang region. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam said Tuesday that a group of Hong Kong residents arrested at sea by mainland Chinese authorities will have to face justice there. Media reports in late August said that the 12 people were trying to leave Hong Kong by boat for Taiwan. Some of them are allegedly wanted by Hong Kong police. Lam did not respond to a reporter's question about whether lawyers are being prevented from contacting the group, but she did acknowledge that Hong Kong's representative office in Guangzhou, China, should try to contact local authorities to find out if there is any assistance to offer.
I can say that on this occasion, the police have been notified of the arrest of these Hong Kong residents. But the question is not a question of simple getting back, as you have put it, because if these Hong Kong residents were arrested for bridging mainland offences, then they have to be dealt with according to the mainland laws, in accordance with the jurisdiction, before any other things could happen.
Following another arrest of outspoken politician Tam Tak Chi, Lam faced questions about freedom of expression in the territory. Tam was arrested Sunday for allegedly making seditious remarks in public and online. Lam gave a reminder that freedoms are not absolute and do face limits. She also asked media workers to relax if the content of the reporting was fair and not against the law. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. China Tuesday said that Indian forces had crossed into territory in holds along their disputed border and fired warning shots at a Chinese patrol in a move it called a serious military provocation and a violation of their agreements. Zhao Lijian, spokesperson for China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, said the incursion occurred Monday along the southern coast of Pengang Lake.
9月7日, 印军非法越线,
they are serious military provocations of a very bad nature, he told reporters during a news briefing in Beijing. Zhao urged India to immediately stop dangerous acts, immediately withdraw cross-line personnel, strictly discipline frontline troops, and strictly investigate and punish personnel who fired shots to ensure that similar incidents do not occur again. India denied the Chinese allegations and said the Chinese soldiers tried to surround one of their forward posts in a grave provocation and also fired warning shots. The two countries' local military commanders have held several rounds of talks to defuse the tense standoff. The nuclear-armed rivals have been engaged in a tense standoff in the cold desert Ladakh region since May, and their defense ministers met Friday in Moscow in the first high-level direct contact between the sides since the standoff began. Zhao said the shooting, which took place on Monday, was the first time the border tranquility had been interrupted since 1975.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea's latest COVID-19 outbreak has triggered a public backlash against conservative Christian churches for defying government orders aimed at preventing the disease's spread. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. As the campaigning for the November presidential election in the United States heats up, President Donald Trump and members of his administration are forcefully denying a magazine article alleging he made disparaging remarks about military members. Critics, including his Democratic challenger in the election, Joe Biden, cite the report as an example that Trump is unfit for office. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Late last week, The Atlantic detailed unnamed accounts of President Trump making disparaging remarks about fallen military members. Elements of the story were confirmed by other news outlets. President Trump has forcefully rejected the report and on Twitter Sunday accused news outlets of working with the Democratic Party on a massive disinformation campaign. Trump's opponent in the November presidential election, former Vice President Joe Biden, said armed service members like his late son deserve an apology if the news account is true.
If these statements are true, the president should humbly apologize to every Gold Star mother and father and every Blue Star family that he's denigrated and insulted.
Biden referenced Gold and Blue Star families, members of whom either served or died in the line of duty.
We have
The president says he strongly supports the military and its members.
There is nobody that feels more strongly about our soldiers, our wounded warriors, our soldiers that died in war than I do. It's a hoax. And you'll hear more of these things, totally unrelated, as we get closer and closer to election.
On Sunday, Chuck Hagel, a Vietnam veteran and President Barack Obama's Secretary of Defense, said the allegations in the Atlantic article fit a pattern of remarks Trump has made about veterans like the late Senator John McCain.
He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war hero.
5.5 years.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
The history of this president over the last 3 and 4 years is pretty clear. And you can go through a litany of past things that he said from his mouth, actions that he's taken, and it corroborates, really, the Goldberg article in The Atlantic.
But Ohio's Republican Governor Mike DeWine questions the timing of any story this close to an election.
You know, a lot of things come out in a campaign. And I think sometimes people, when they only come out during a campaign, you know, people are somewhat skeptical about them. This is, you know, we're into the 60 days. And so I don't know what, you know, impact that's going to have.
Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
This is VOA Asia. Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi launched her re-election bid Tuesday ahead of polls set for November, vowing victory at a scaled-down ceremony in the capital after her original plans were wiped away by a surge in coronavirus cases. Suu Kyi, who rules as state councillor, had planned to launch her campaign in the commercial capital of Yangon, but canceled the trip Monday on advice of the health ministry. Wearing a red mask decorated with a peacock, the emblem of the NLD, and a plastic face shield, she attended a flag-raising ceremony to signal the start of the campaign rally for her party and thank supporters for flying the party's red flag at their homes across the country. In an early video message to supporters, Suu Kyi asked them to follow the COVID-19 safety protocols. The election is set to serve as a test of that country's first democratic government in half a century and is seen by analysts as an important test of Myanmar's transition away from direct military rule as it grapples with crises on multiple fronts. The country had gone for weeks without local transmissions, and many restrictions had been relaxed until mid-August, when cases were detected in the western state of Rakhine. We continue on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said that with the U.S. election coming up, media companies, including Facebook, have to prepare the American people for the possibility that the results will not be known right away.
One of the things that I think we and other media need to start doing is preparing the American people that there's nothing illegitimate about this election taking additional days or even weeks to make sure that all the votes are counted. In fact, that might be important to make sure that this is a legitimate and fair election. So we're going to do a bunch of different messaging around that just to make sure that people know that that's normal. So if one of the candidates in any of the races claims victory before there's a consensus result, then we're going to add some informational context to that post directly saying that that there's no consensus result yet.
Zuckerberg said in an interview with Axios on HBO, Facebook plans to add some informational context to potential posts of candidates claiming victory before there's a consensus result. Facebook had been criticized for its role in the 2016 U.S. elections, having been slow to respond to interference campaigns on its platform then, but is now making efforts to combat that interference. Facebook began verifying the identity of ad buyers in 2018 and recently said it will restrict new political ads in the 7 days before the election. We continue on VOA Asia. The studio lights dim, the band begins to strum, and it's showtime for a Singapore Gaitai concert, a popular form of entertainment in Southeast Asia that features songs, skits, and over-the-top costumes to celebrate the dead. Gloria Tso has more.
The lights are on, the cameras are rolling, and veteran singer Sam Liu is taking the stage to perform a lively concert for the dead. It's called Gotai, a kind of variety show popular in Southeast Asia's Chinese diaspora. It's got vibrant music, colorful skits, and elaborate costumes in honor of the Hungry Ghost Festival. On the seventh month of the Chinese lunar calendar, spirits of the dead are believed to return to wander the earth. But even with brightly dressed statues on set, this year's festivities will be a little more muted. There's no audience members to cheer on the celebrations, which usually draw in thousands of Singaporeans.
Of course I'm disappointed. Every year it's the same feeling. When the Hungry Ghost Festival comes, everyone's very happy. But this year just feels a bit empty. There's no particular atmosphere to it. There's nothing special about what costumes I prepare, what songs I'll be singing. The difference is too great compared to before.
For the past 4 years, Lex S Entertainment Productions has live-streamed the Gotai performances. But this year, hundreds of thousands have tuned in, even some from abroad. In fact, the live streams have become a lifeline for Gotai performers from all around the region. Performer Feba Huang says it's kept her in the spotlight when so many other events have been cancelled.
There were 2 or 3 months where we just didn't have any income at all, because since there were no Gotai venues, so we didn't have any income. We started selling things online to make up for a little bit of income, and now this live-streamed Gotai has started.
Gotai fans hope the shows will return to live stages soon, but for now they are doing all they can to celebrate, leaving plenty of food for the gods, paying their respects to the dead, and huddling around a screen with their friends, all to enjoy the show.
That was Reuters' Gloria Tso. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. Many robots are being developed and used these days to maximize speed so factories can efficiently make more products. One robot developed at the Georgia Institute of Technology is celebrated for how slow it is. It's called a Slothbot, and visitors can see it working at the Atlanta Botanical Garden. VOA's Elizabeth Lee is here to tell us all about it.
Hidden in the canopy behind the leaves, look closely and you'll see eyes staring back at you. This is Slothbot, a robot inspired by the famously slow animal after a trip to Costa Rica.
I got mildly obsessed with sloths. These super slow animals were just sitting there, and I could not understand how these animals could exist.
Roboticist Magnus Egerstedt realized the sloth's slow movement makes them energy efficient and almost invisible to predators. Always on the hunt to understand the natural world through robots, he and his team at Georgia Institute of Technology decided to imitate nature and created the Slothbot. At the Atlanta Botanical Garden, the solar-powered Slothbot is programmed to search for sunlight and collects data such as temperature and information on the light available to plants. Unlike a stationary camera, the Slothbot can move over a large area to make observations. This Slothbot can help with conservation and the effort to save endangered plant species, says Atlanta Botanical Gardens' Emily Coffey.
1 in every 5 plants are at risk of extinction. We have to really think creatively.
To find out about mystery pollinators for rare orchids, for example, researchers would have to spend hours or even days watching what pollinators come to a plant.
We could put the Slothbot there instead. It can allow us to take away from that need of a human sitting there watching this for hours, the flower for hours on end, to actually allow us to be able instead to take video of that and then develop machine learning algorithms to actually quickly analyze, you know, weeks if not months of data.
Researchers hope to one day take the robot to the forests of Ecuador or even Costa Rica, where this robot may come eye to eye with a real slow-moving sloth. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, and have a wonderful day ahead.